This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs the Playbook, and I am in the house of champions. This is the University of Oregon in their press conference room, and I'm with their leader, the amazing head coach of the Oregon Ducks, Dan Lanning. Welcome to the Playbook.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, we've only known each other for a little while, and I always say that, you know, my frequency is my neighborhood, and man, you definitely are my neighbor. It was amazing how much synergy we have, not only in our journey, but in the energy or philosophy of how our lives matter. And as a head coach, the first thing I want to say is your life really matters, especially at an institution here at the University of Oregon, not just to your players, but to the entire campus. And I am amazed, reflect on, you know, how someone like Deion Sanders could change an entire university. People don't realize applications are up 3 times because of the leadership that people like you and Deion give to these extraordinary institutions, the opportunities that they provide. But it's not an easy journey to get here.
No, certainly not.
And, you know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, where did the journey start to be the head coach here? And take me through the challenges of what other people thought that maybe even created doubt in your own head about changing your direction of being a head coach of one of, if not the best college football team in the nation.
Yeah, it started at a young age. I always had aspirations to be the best at whatever I was doing and at the highest level of wherever I was at.
I got to stop you because as a coach, people ask me, I do so many of these interviews, they'll say, what's the common denominator of all these amazing people, like from Cameron Diaz to Deepak Chopra to Dan Lanning? And I'll say, the desire that they must be what they can be. Did that kind of define you as a kid?
Yeah, I think that's so true. I mean, and being in an environment where there was never, like, limitations just didn't necessarily make sense either. Right. Things that were common sense to some, like, wasn't common sense to me. Like, I've always said, like, I always wanted all my cards or all, you know, all my chips on the table. I never wanted to live with regret. And if wherever I was able to maximize that at, you know, that was the hope. Now, you know, both my parents were teachers. I went to a small school. I was an elementary PE teacher and a high school football coach. But I always felt like, OK, there's something else out there. There's a little bit more. And what's going to stop you from getting there? And then you start chasing the dream. So it's been a lot of fun journey, a lot of adversity along the way. But really the driving force for me the entire time was not making sure I wasn't living with regret. You know, whether it's my first college job, you know, driving 13 hours to get that job when I didn't have a job interview set up, you know, that whole car ride, the only thing I'm thinking about is, if I didn't make this drive, what will it look like 10 years from now, right? Rather than, you know, the opposite of what it looks like now.
And how much of that came from, you and I shared a college football experience of love, not really of aspiration of being a professional, especially as we got into college. How much of that desire and where you are today goes back to high school and college football days of playing football?
Yeah, you know, I always loved sports. I always loved football. And I probably, you know, I was the guy when I was a little kid that thought I was going to play for the Orlando Magic with Penny Hardaway and Shaquille O'Neal. Like, that's what I thought. And then somewhere in there, reality sets in. I think somewhere in high school, I maybe tried to, I surprised myself a little bit about, like, wow, I did that. I accomplished something. I got an opportunity to go play college ball, even though it wasn't a big stage. And I think I started to realize, when I put time and effort into something, I can kind of surprise myself. And, you know, when you start sparking opportunities to surprise yourself with what you can do, when you fail, it doesn't bother you that much because you're sitting there saying, if I put a little more effort into it, what can you create? And that's probably what I'm a product of.
And a lot of people talk about transition, but I like to talk about expansion. And when you are empowering so many young leaders, which you do here at the University of Oregon on and off the field, it's really having them develop skills, knowledge, and desire. It's not about transitioning. What are some of the things that you've learned with the kids today that help them to identify who they are in their own skills, their own knowledge, on and off the field, but to utilize their desire to enhance or expand the skills and the knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's really simple. I feel like hard work works, right? Like, yeah. So it starts with hard work. You have to be willing to do more at a higher intensity, at a higher level than most people will do to reach your heights. I think the other piece that is really hard to see is, you know, self-awareness. And we talk about how most people are really not self-aware. They all raise their hand that they are. And then you ask the people around them and they'll tell you, no, they're not. They have no clue. So trying, you know, really hard to identify your strengths and weaknesses and lean into your strengths and build onto your weaknesses. And I think those are, you know, skills that we try to teach our guys here. Like, what, you know, what's your groundhog? What are you really good at? What do you do really well? And then finding that consistency to attack the things that you have to improve.
And when we talk about limitations, I was speaking earlier about we can never overachieve our own self-image, but you and I both share there is a reality that we live in. There's the man-made constructs of you got a mortgage, a house, right. A family. There's man-made constructs of time. There's only some time in the day. I find great leaders help people manage not holding down their own self-image, but putting them in a place to succeed. Right. And one of the things I love about football coaches, the best ones that I've been around, is that they have an uncanny ability of putting people in the best position to succeed. And a lot of times people have the wrong perception that, oh, you know, I could play with Shaq. Right. And they stick to that in too long, and then they end up where they don't want to be because they're not in the right position. In deciphering that and then convincing someone, and I'm sure this is a daily activity, to move positions, what are some of the things that you point out without discouraging someone that they can't play basketball, Shaquille O'Neal, maybe they're better to be a cornerback at Oregon?
Right. Yeah, I think it probably starts with defining success, right? And once you understand what success looks like, and the hard part is separating what success looks like for you as opposed to a worldly vision of success, because the worldly vision of success is not really the vision that you want to drive towards. And I always tell our players, you can't eat an elephant in one bite. It takes several bites. You know, you got to get the fork and knife out and go to work one bite at a time. But I think when you start defining what success looks like, then you kind of have a better understanding of what growth looks like. And if you can move someone where they can grow and you can water a plant, it's going to get bigger. It's going to, you know, start to flourish, and you create an environment where people can have success. Well, then they're going to really buy in to, you know, the vision that you might have for them, or even recreate an own vision for themselves and what success can look like.
And do you find kids today are excited about working hard? You know, obviously you have a reputation here of bringing the best out of people. And in order to bring the best out of someone, they have to be committed.
Yeah.
And they have to be committed to daily work at it. Do you find that to be a challenge when you obviously are promoting and educating potential players here that this is a serious place? If you want to win, you're going to have to give me what it takes to win.
Yeah, I think blind faith is tough, right? You can't operate in a world where it's blind faith. But I think if you can show, you know, incremental growth with your players and show examples of guys making improvements and becoming better, you know, and kind of hit them with the before and after photos of where they were and where they're at now, I think that's something that really drives success. When somebody can see that happening, when they can see themselves, you know, having success and creating success, then it becomes so much easier to work a little bit harder.
And one of the things a lot of people don't know about being a head coach, as much as your players are always watching you and the alumni are always watching you and the fans and the students are always watching you, your real job is empowering your staff.
Right.
And understanding that, I love the movie, you know, Miracle on Ice, because I think Herb is one of the greatest head coaches. He's playing chess when so many other people are playing checkers, and he's putting not only his players in the right position, but what was the other remarkable thing is he put his coaches and his doctor in the right position. The staffs today are extraordinarily large. When I got involved in football, you know, there wasn't many coaches. Now Right. There's like specialists of coaches and coaches of specialists.
Absolutely.
What's the biggest challenge that you're facing today in being able to empower your coaches to be aligned with the mission and the message?
Well, I think that's the piece. You want a group of people that share the same vision and message that you want and that you have for the program. But it's important to know that you need different expertise and different people in the kitchen to cook that meal. And it doesn't just take the chef, it takes the sous chef, it takes the person over there prepping. And that's really what we have on our staff. We have a staff that embraces whatever the role is, you know, finds jobs that fit, you know, their strengths, and then they go attack it. And you get, you know, shocked and awe of the results that come when you ask people to be creative, think outside the box, and maybe give them an end-all goal, but tell them, hey, I want you to be creative in how you get there. And then, you know, maximize that that ability. We have really good people here. I think if I'm good at anything more than directing a vision, it's identifying really good people. And we have really good people here that have created some great continuity for our team. People that care about people. I think that's where it starts. And when you have people that care about people, that's when you start to see success.
One of the other things I love about Oregon and you is I believe there's a mathematical equation of luck. And that's what we pay attention to, plus what we give our intention to, what we do, say, think, feel, and believe every day will equal the coincidences, the coinciding. And you tell a story about you paying attention to and giving intention to being a head coach by 35. How did you follow my formula, and what do you do to help other people follow that formula?
Yeah, I've just always been goal-driven. You know, I worked for a guy named Todd Graham at Arizona State that, you know, talked about speaking victory over yourself, and that's something that always stuck with me, and I started putting my goals on my mirror. And that's something today, you know, that I still do. I still put goals on my mirror, and I think when you go to bed and you're brushing your teeth at night, and when you wake up every morning, you're brushing your teeth, reading your goals, I think a lot of times it can become reality, and that certainly was one of my goals. My goals have changed. They shift. I think they adjust as you get older, and you know your target sights change a little bit. But for me, if you kept the main thing, and you kept it right in front of you, a lot of times, you know, where your focus, your attention, that's what's going to be the result.
And I got my job as a notable sports agent with the most notable sports agency because Lee Steinberg had a vision of the future of sports. And he thought that future involved venture and technology, which were two of the different expertises that I had over your average frustrated athlete that got a law degree and could negotiate well. Football's changing. College football is changing. Your own divisions have changed, and where you're playing and who you're playing has changed. If I was going to tell you today, and I'm interviewing with you to be a CEO of Oregon football, what would you tell me would be that future? What would you be looking for in the future that may not be what other people are thinking today about college football?
Yeah, when you talk about Oregon, that's one of the things that really sticks out to me. You know, a lot of our success is tied to, you know, a company, Nike. And, you know, they had the principles of Nike. And one of those principles is we're in the business of change, right? And you think of Oregon, you think of innovation and being kind of on the cutting edge of climbing ahead. So what would that look like in the future? I think there's going to continue to be more power to the athlete and the people that can, you know, focus on athlete experience, you know, and creating an environment where it's teamwork, not ownership, right? I think there's a big difference in the two. And, you know, really focus on that student athlete experience, you know, that more that'll tie into, you know, future success of this program.
Now, you're also a father and a husband, and I know from experience that's a priority, although a lot of your time may be spent outside of being a father, that of a drop of the hat, that would be your main priority in life. Coaches are great at mantras, sayings, step-by-step type of procedures. Is there anything that you tell your kids every day, or, you know, like a Jim Harbaugh's, you know, nobody has better than us, or for me, it's do your best, learn lessons, and have fun, or I'm proud of you, I love you, I always have your back. Is there any parenting mantra that you have for your three boys that you also may have for your team?
You know, more than anything, it's just the intentionality of our time when we're together. Whenever my boys were sick, or excuse me, when my wife was sick, when she had cancer, you know, I made a little poster that we would read every single night before the boys went to bed. And there was, you know, a few things on there, but, you know, God loves you and you love, and we love you. You can do anything that you set your mind to, you know, just kind of setting that expectation for them early that anything that you want to accomplish. And I have three wonderful boys and they're all have kind of gone different directions, but I think they truly believe that anything that they attack, that they can truly become. So those are some things that they would just read every single night before we go to bed. And we've kind of fallen out of that rhythm of doing it, but it's something that's always stuck with, you know, with me, that, you know, these guys have some direction as far as, you know, what they're going to be able to accomplish.
Yeah, I'll tell you this as a parent of four myself. I've learned there's three stages of being a parent: idolization, demonization, and then humanization.
Yeah.
And I know you're kind of going through that.
Yeah, we're in the teenager stage right now.
Not like a 14-year-old. But last question real quick. What's the number one thing written on your mirror now?
Help my people reach their dreams and aspirations, their goals. So number one on my mirror is help my people reach their dreams and goals. And that's really because I feel like every day I wake up, I'm living my dream. I get to do exactly what I set out to do. And I want to help create that for some other people.
Which, like I said, finishes up full round circle to where we started, because we definitely are on the same frequency, because I feel the same of my life, living the dream, and more importantly, our mission to empower others to be their best, to live to their potential, to fulfill their dreams, makes you the dream coach here at the Dream School. And the wings behind me say it all. If you haven't met or followed Dan Lanning, if you're not an Oregon fan, I bet you are now. Thank you so much, Dan Lanning, head coach at the University of Oregon, for joining me.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs, The Playbook.